From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. Today, the three people behind those really funny video hip-hop parodies on Saturday Night Live. Andy Samberg, Akiva Schaffer, and Norma Tacconi. Together, they go by the name The Lonely Island. Their videos include Bleep in a Box, featuring Samberg and Justin Timberlake, and Lazy Sunday with Samberg and Chris Parnell. Samberg says it all started when they were young and Schaffer and Tacconi talked over a track by the Wu-Tang Clan.
It's all the Wu-Tang and people on their block being like, yo, did you hear this guy, Shaheem, got shot? And everyone's like, oh my God, no. And it's like really intense. And then Keeve and Yorm dubbed themselves over it going, oh no, not Shaheem.
The Lonely Island has a new album called The Whack Album. Also, jazz critic Kevin Whitehead reviews Woman Child, the debut album by Cecile McLaurin-Salvant. That's coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. You know those really funny hip-hop videos on Saturday Night Live? Videos like Bleep in a Box? Bleep being a word I don't say on the radio that's slang for a guy's privates. It featured Andy Samberg and Justin Timberlake. And Three Way featuring Samberg, Timberlake, and Lady Gaga. They're part of SNL's series of digital shorts. My guests are the trio that wrote and created those shorts, Andy Samberg, Akiva Schaffer, and Norma Tacconi. Together, they go by the name The Lonely Island. They met when they were junior high students in Berkeley, California. After college, they all moved to L.A. and started to write and star in their own comic video shorts. In 2005, they were all hired to work on Saturday Night Live, Andy Samberg as a cast member, Akiva Schaffer and Norma Tacconi as writers. During their first year at SNL, they wrote, produced, and shot the digital short Lazy Sunday, featuring Samberg and Chris Parnell. After its broadcast, it went viral on the internet before NBC forced YouTube to take it down. The three now do projects on their own. Samberg has starred in numerous films and has a new sitcom coming to Fox in the fall called Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Schaffer directed the film The Watch, and Tacconi played the pretentious artist Booth Jonathan on the HBO series Girls. They continued to create digital shorts, even though they've left SNL. The Lonely Island has just released its third album of hip-hop-inspired parodies called The Whack Album. Let's start with a track. This is YOLO, and it features guests Adam Levine and Kendrick Lamar.
Is a precious gift, so don't get too crazy. It's not worth the risk.
You know that we are still young, so don't be dumb. Don't trust anyone, 'cause you only live once.
You only live once, that's the motto. So take your chill pill, ease off the throttle.
Never go to loud clubs, 'cause it's bad for your ears. Your friends will all be sorry when they can't hear.
And stay the hell away from drugs, 'cause they not legal. Then bury all your money in the backyard like a beagle.
'Cause you should never trust the bank, they've been known to fail. And never travel by car or bus, boat or by rail.
And don't travel by plane, and don't travel at all. Build a bomb shelter basement with titanium walls.
And wear titanium suits in case pianos fall on ya.
And never go with saunas, 'cause they're crawling with piranhas.
And never take the stairs, 'cause they're often unsafe.
You only live once, don't let it go to waste.
Andy Samberg, Norma Tacconi, Akiva Schaffer, welcome to Fresh Air. Thank you so much for coming. So let's start with YOLO, which we just heard, which usually means you only live once, but in yours it's you ought to look out. So which one is more of the motto of your life? which one were you more brought up with?
You know, our version begins as you only live once, and then by the end, the conclusion is you ought to look out. So I think it's kind of like telling our story of getting older and using more discretion and more caution. But it's also a cautionary tale. Like, you ought to live, you ought to look out, and you only live once. It's somewhere in between, I think, is what.
Yeah, you can go far. Right, you can go too far with you ought to look out as well, until you're just basically sitting in a room by yourself, rocking back and forth, holding your knees and not wanting to go outside.
Howard Hughes-ing it, so to speak.
Yeah, so that could be bad too.
Well, my favorite line is that there's no such thing as too much Purell.
Thank you.
We did not get paid for that. That was not a sponsored
Yeah, I hadn't even thought of that.
No, we actually didn't. The way you said that made it seem like it was open-ended, like maybe we did get paid for that.
Oh, right. No, we didn't. Yeah.
So the hook of this, the song part is like really catchy. Did you really want to be regular songwriters as opposed to comic songwriters when you were young or now?
Not really. I mean, this is Andy. I'm speaking personally. I always wanted to do comedy in one way, shape, or form. And I did mess around with comedy music when I was in like high school and college.
Yeah, we all did. For
and sure. Then we sort of fell into it on accident when the three of us decided to move to LA together, and we were all living together. And our roommate had like a little digital 8-track, and we would have some drinks and come home and make joke songs. And that's sort of how it started. But it was never any ability music-wise is completely happenstance. We sort of stumbled into that part of it.
We grew up in Berkeley, California. This is Yorma speaking. Hi. Listening to hip-hop and R&B. And so in college, I started making little beats on very, very simple programs like Sound Edit, which is, doesn't even have like a metronome in it. And so when we had our friend's 8-track, we would just loop old funk samples, like sort of the way that, you know, hip-hop came about, and make little beats and just hang out and make songs till the wee hours of the morning, basically, just to mess around. It wasn't even thinking that it was going to go anywhere.
Now, on your new album and on, you know, some of the digital shorts, you have, like, real hip-hop stars on there with you. So what are some of the things that you've learned from working with people who do this seriously for real?
That they're better than us.
Yeah, it's harder than it seems.
We learned a lot about recording from Justin Timberlake, legitimately, because that was so early on when we did the first one, Blank in a Box. I don't know if what you're allowed to say.
Yeah, not the thing that's in the box.
Okay, great. It's Richard in a box. Yeah.
Richard in a box.
But that was pretty early on in our comedy music career. So we were still really just doing, like, teaching ourselves how to use the stuff and didn't really know how to use, like, Pro Tools or any of that stuff. And we never used engineers. We would just be in our office. So when he came and did that song with us, he taught us, like, 10 things, I would say, that we still use to this day about just proper recording and kind of little tricks about using, you know, the left speaker versus the right speaker and stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
And stacking vocals, especially on a singing part, things like that. You know, every song we make that has a singing part, I'll do a temp vocal and sort of come up with a loose melody that, if you listen to the early one versus what we end up with when we get a professional on it, sounds vaguely similar, but obviously one is professional and one is temp. But even when we do that, just to get a feel for how big and how poppy we want the song to sound, we'll use those tricks that we learned in terms of stacking vocals and possibly even doing, you know, flourishes and hypes and harmonies and that kind of stuff.
And we'll be very meticulous with that too. Like, Andy will do counter melodies and all sorts of things like that, you know, just to make it sound right so we know if it's going to work or not.
They might be counter melodies. We have no music training, so we're sort of just winging
it. We have no idea. Like, well, it sounds bad, so it might be counter to something that sounds good.
It's counter to what you want to hear.
Well, if you're just joining us, my guests are Andy Samberg, Yorma Taconi, and Akiva Schaffer, the three members of Lonely Island, the group that did all those great digital shorts, music like hip-hop digital shorts for Saturday Night Live. Now they have a new album, and that's called The Whack Album, and we should hear another track from it. So since we were talking about Justin Timberlake, why don't we hear Three Way, which is really hysterical, and it's been a digital short on Saturday Night Live, and now it's on the new album. So I'd like you to talk about how you came up with this idea. And the idea is basically, it's cool for two guys to be together if it's a three-way with a girl in between.
How do we come up
They're
with
looking
it?
For any excuse to get into bed together, these two guys.
Yeah, that's the real.
There was the third in the trilogy of these two guys, these two characters. And, you know, in the first two, there were all sorts of allusions to, like, how into each other they are. And we felt like that was sort of the natural next step.
How deeply they were looking into each other's eyes and how close they were.
Yeah. They're best friends who find each other extremely cool and sexy. But it was also a case of just SNL circumstance, which was Justin was hosting and Lady Gaga was the musical guest. And we knew that for the third one, it would be a real anti-upper to throw Lady Gaga into the mix. And naturally, when you add a girl to the two guys, it turns into a three-way. So then we had to think of a comedy angle for that, and that's what we came up with.
And did were they both willing, or did you have to convince them?
Oh, they were willing. I mean, Justin, when we did the second one, Mother Lover, me, Keeve, and Yorm were the more hesitant ones. We were like, I don't know if we want to go back to that well, because, you know, D in a Box went over so well. I don't know if we want to mess with something that is generally liked. And we were like, you know, if we don't do it, we're safe. And Justin said, that's exactly why we should do it. Because who would have the audacity to do it again?
That was very similar on Three-Way as well. I mean, we had the idea really early on in the week. And usually, you know, we only come up with the idea on like a Thursday night, record it Thursday night, and start filming Friday into Saturday morning and start editing Saturday morning until the show airs. And that's basically the natural way that we did any of our digital shorts. And this one, we actually had the idea on a Monday, and then the three of us were totally hesitant the entire week, and Justin kept being like, no, it's great. Just do it.
He's very confident. And to answer your question, Gaga was 100% into it.
That's like, a lot of work to do in a few days. I mean, because it's like your videos, it's like there's an edit every few seconds, and the scene keeps changing, and there's costume changing. It changes. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we don't work there anymore.
We still put the exact same amount of effort into the videos that we're making now. It's just that we have, like, maybe three more days to do them.
It's really intense. I mean, the credit also to SNL and to their crew and their system that's built in to be able to pull something off that fast. They allowed us to do it in that crazy schedule. And, you know, they had props and crew of, you know, people putting together sets overnight on a Thursday for a Friday shoot. Constantly, when we'd come up with an idea late Thursday night and be like, okay, this is it. And then all these people have to be like, okay, all the wardrobe and everybody in the wig department.
We needed a horse head and a hot air balloon basket.
Yeah. And it's, you know, you get so used to it that then you show up on Friday morning and you're like, where's our horse head? And they're like, guys, you gave us the song at like 5 a.m.
Yeah. We're having a puppet master make it.
Yeah. So it was, you know, it's an incredible machine to be a part of, and it's the only way it can really happen is to have hundreds of people all working towards this one goal at the same time, because there's no choice because it's airing Saturday.
Okay, so this is Three-Way by Lonely Island, and it's from the new album, the Whack album, and we're going to hear Andy Samberg, Justin Timberlake, and a little bit of Lady Gaga. She's more prominent on the video than she is on the song. So here it is, a cleaned up version. Three-Way.
Your mom says hi, Jinx. But it's half and six.
You know, I just got a page from a girl that I met last week at the Payless.
Shoe socks. I also have a cutie to call who loves the way I knock on her boots.
Well, it's time to back. Let's handle that. In 2 to 6 hours, we'll meet back then. We're broke. Now let's shoot.
Roll up to her crib with some Bartles and James.
Hop off the bus with the Alizé.
Now hold up, player. What you diggity doing here?
I should diggity ask you the same.
Then she sang.
Boys, what want you both? I hope that you think that's cool.
Say word.
I know most guys won't freak together.
But she forgot about the golden rule.
It's okay when it's in a three-way. It's not gay when it's in a three-way. With a honey in the middle, there's some leeway. The area's great in a 1-2-3-way.
That's Three-Way with Andy Samberg and Justin Timberlake and Lady Gaga from the new Lonely Island album, the Whack album. And my guests are the three members of the Lonely Island, Andy Samberg, Akiva Schaffer, and Yorma Taconi. And that's just, like, so funny. And
thank you.
And Andy, what do they do to you? Is there processing on your voice, or did you just, like, use a different voice on that?
I think maybe we do drop my voice on those ones in particular.
Slightly. Ever just so slightly pitch shifted down.
To make you like a little more seductive.
If I had just woken up like right now, I could probably pull it off like, hey, girl.
That sounds pretty good.
That's pretty close.
I got something real important to
get. Oh, man, you're making me real attracted to you.
So just sit down.
Oh, don't. Please.
And listen.
Oh, it's too much.
You'd never say anything. Tell me you'd never say anything like that in real life to a girl.
No, definitely not. In real life, I go, hey, I think you're really pretty and neat, and
do you want to go to the library with me?
What's your take on this week's Game of Thrones?
My guests are Andy Samberg, Akiva Schaffer, and Yorma Taconi, known together as The Lonely Island. Their new album is called The Whack Album. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to the interview I recorded with the three members of The Lonely Island, Andy Samberg, Akiva Schaffer, and Yorma Taconi. Their new album of hip-hop parodies is called The Whack Album. So when you started working together, when you were, what, in junior high school?
Yeah, we were all in different sort of goofy music groups. I was in a group with two friends of mine called Strike Three because we had all been dissed by girls, so we'd all struck out.
So did you do for real music or comic music?
No, it was all jokes. All joke rap music.
Yeah, me and my friends would record ourselves on, you know, little boom boxes with a record button on cassette and do like comedy raps that we'd written in high school.
Yeah.
I would say we were people who were very, very into music. Not just people who just kind of like music. I'd say that was more our training. I would say that making whatever these little groups they're talking about are were not ever like, there was never any goals on it. There was no internet back then, so it wasn't like we were putting things online or anything.
I will say I wasn't a part of it, but I feel like I remember the first actual Lonely Island piece of audio, which is Akiva and Yorma recorded themselves over this skit from a Wu-Tang Clan album. And it's like this really intense...
it's very sad, actually.
It's a bunch of, yeah, it's all the Wu-Tang and people on their block being like, yo, did you hear this guy, Shaheem, got shot? And everyone's like, oh my God, no. And it's like really intense. And then Keeve and Yorm dubbed themselves over it going, oh no, not Shaheem.
Wait, is he the guy from, I interrupted. Sorry, what were you saying?
It was just us being super lame.
There's so many members of the Wu-Tang Clan, you can just slip a couple nerds in there.
Just two nerdy guys who get railroaded and talked over.
Part of the gang.
So what were some of the biggest differences between the music that you loved when you started doing this and the lives you were actually living?
Well, you know, we grew up in Berkeley where hip-hop and R&B was the predominant culture, but we're, you know, tiny little white dudes. We weren't, like, living the rap life at all. We just loved the music. We definitely were fans of it and appreciators of it, but from an outside perspective, and I think that's where our comedy comes from. It comes from a love for what that music is and what it represents, but also always drawing a clear line to let everyone know that we don't believe that we are a part of it.
So what were your mother's reactions to you listening to rap music, that some of which was probably very sexist and some of which was probably, you know, very much, you know, bragging about violence? I'm assuming that your mothers were, I think all your parents moved to Berkeley from New York in the 60s and 70s. That's what I read. I'm not sure it's right.
Yeah, that is correct.
But I'm sure that they had... you know, an ethic that was kind of different from, like, the kind of sexist bragging on a lot of rap.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. As do we.
We had to hide it in our house like pornography, literally. The cassette tapes. Absolutely. I hid them.
And my mother would go through and actually edit my tapes. Like, she'd edit out the songs that were in anyway. Like, you know, I had a Fat Boys album that she edited, and I remember her hiding Run DMC's album Raisin Hell, which was one of my first albums that I had on vinyl, and hiding it behind this bookshelf, and I would have to go and sneak and listen to it. And by today's standards, it's like, I mean, it's the most tame thing ever, you know, I mean.
My mom took away License to Ill because I did it like I did it like that. I did it with a wiffle ball bat, so the first Beastie Boys record, and that was enough. She heard that line and took away the whole record.
Little did they know that we were listening to like Too Short and stuff.
I was going to say, I have two older sisters.
The Eazy-E was hidden.
Yeah, I have two older sisters, and Easy and Too Short were on all the time. And I think because I was the youngest, by the time it got to me and what I was listening to, they were kind of just tired.
Yeah, you had a distinct advantage. Both me and Keeva are the oldest child.
My dad got into rap. Like, we'd like bump the Boys in the Hood soundtrack in the car on the way to soccer practice and stuff.
I don't know what I was thinking most of the time, but I played so much rap for my mother growing up because I was like, oh, this is so cool, and this guy does this cool verse and whatever. Yeah. And so she, at this point, she knows rappers. Like, she can pick out really like people, like rappers that people wouldn't know. Like, I mean, she knows like when Keek the Sneak is on the radio. Like, she'll be like, "Oh, that's Keek. Oh, yeah, he sounds great."
Oh, it's Keek. How's he doing?
So, did your mothers ever sit you down and explain why women should be treated as equals and not seen as sex objects when you were listening to rap?
Yes, absolutely. There was a moment, I don't know what I can say on the radio, but like there was a moment where I, under my breath at one point, called my mother a bitch, and my mother hit me so hard and like shook me and looked me in the eye and was like, "Don't ever say that word about a woman ever in your life. It is the most insulting thing you can possibly say to a woman." And then I remember my brother years later saying, he did the exact same thing under his breath. He called her a bitch, and then she like tried to go there with him, and he was like, I said witch. Oh my god, why would you think I like?" And just completely tricked her. I was like, just younger kids are just smarter. Like,
yeah.
But because of that, I mean, I never say that word ever.
Same. I had a similar insulting experience, but it was with my sister and her friend. I had friends over, some of which were girls. I was in like junior high, and I was trying to impress them. And I called my sister a bitch, and her friend came in the room and like pinned me down and hit me a bunch of times. It was humiliating.
Yeah,
but I definitely stopped.
Andy Samberg, Akiva Schaffer, and Yorma Taconi will be back in the second half of the show. Their new album, under their group name The Lonely Island, is called The Whack Album. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
The Neubauer Family Foundation supports WHYY's Fresh Air and its commitment to sharing ideas and encouraging meaningful conversation. Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Arizona State University Online, more than 60 undergraduate and graduate online degree programs at radio.asu.edu. From Dignity Health, healthcare with a commitment to human kindness and a belief in the healing power of humanity at HelloHumanKindness.org. And from Angie's List, providing reviews of local roofers, painters, landscapers, and plumbers to keep the consumer informed. More at AngiesList.com. This is NPR.
Coming up, how the members of The Lonely Island, Andy Samberg, Akiva Schaffer, and Yorma Taconi, got hired by SNL. And we'll ask Taconi about his part on the HBO series Girls, playing the pretentious artist Booth Jonathan. And Kevin Whitehead reviews the debut album by singer Cecile McLaurin-Salvant. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Let's get back to our interview with Andy Samberg, Akiva Schaffer, and Yorma Taconi. Together, they go by the name The Lonely Island. They wrote and produced those really funny hip-hop videos for Saturday Night Live, which was part of their larger series, Digital Shorts. Their first year on the show, 2005, they did the video hip-hop parody Lazy Sunday, featuring Samberg and Chris Parnell, which went viral on the internet after it was broadcast. Samberg is a former SNL cast member. Schaffer and Taconi are former writers. The Lonely Island has just released its third album of hip-hop parodies called The Whack Album. So you all got on Saturday Night Live at the same time. Andy is a performer and writer, and Yorma and Akiva as writers. Did you have a joint audition, or did you each audition separately?
Auditioned separately. I had been doing a lot of stand-up, so I auditioned first. And then, you know, we had been writing for the MTV Movie Awards, and Jimmy Fallon was the host. So he was there along with Steve Higgins and Mike Shoemaker, who were producers at SNL, and a bunch of SNL writers came with them. And we got along really well with all of them. So Jimmy and Higgins and Shoemaker recommended us to Lorne. So I came in and auditioned, and it went well. And then they said, you know, these guys are best when you have the three of them together, you know, which was correct. So they offered Akiva and Yorma to audition as well. Yorma did audition.
Yeah, which is the most nerve-wracking thing I will ever do. And it's being beamed to, like, NBC West Coast, and Lauren and Tina are in the room, and it is totally nerve-wracking.
And Akiva, who had no interest in being a cast member, opted to just have a writer's meeting. It went well enough that I got hired in the cast, and Keith and Yorma both got hired as writers. But I think what they did not realize they were getting was two writers who also happened to be really good directors. And that was...
Thanks, Andy.
You're welcome. It's part of the story. Yep. you know, because when we brought in...
We were
in,
not
it
hired
like,
to make shorts.
No, not at all. No. But, you know, the classic thing that we have always done, and I think... Keeve is really the spearheader of that, is to be really proactive and to just, if you have an idea you like, go out and make it. And then you don't have to explain to people why something's funny. You can just show them. So these guys went out and shot a video on their own called Bing Bong Brothers and brought it in and said, would you ever air this? And they were like, well, we're trying to break all these new cast members, so it would be confusing to put something on with you guys in it. But definitely continue to do these and bring them in, because we always need pre-tapes to turn sets over during commercial breaks or when we're in an act break kind of a thing. You know, we can run a pre-tape and that gives us more time to do costume changes and set changes. So we just started shooting them on our own. And the third one we made was Lazy Sunday. And after that, they were like, okay, you guys are a film unit. Keep going.
Yeah. And Akiva was always our sort of our main director. Like, I mean, I kind of learned how to direct from him and to edit as well. And so we would, you know, in the beginning it was always Keith as the director, and I would be making a lot of the music for what we were doing. And then that sort of changed when I started doing some of the MacGruber's and some other ones. And so I started doing shorts as well.
Akiva, did you study videos so you could really make yours look authentic?
I was studying for it my whole life, not knowing I was studying for it. I was just obsessed with them. I didn't have cable growing up, and I would go to friends' houses and just watch MTV. Like, honestly, like it was like I would have like sugar cereal and watch MTV, because those are things that were not allowed in my house. I would just do it like a fiend. Like, I wouldn't even care if they were home or they were asleep. I would just watch. For
and
sure.
Keep's parents had his TV under lock and key. Literally, like there was a key that you had to. How did it work, Keith? I mean, you just sneak up into their room and take.
It
the
only
key.
Lasted like a month, but there was a month where my mom like got off out of some catalog, like a thing where it's like, you know, where like somehow it locks the power cord or something. You know, kind of the equivalent today of like, you know, putting a password on people's iPads, which I'm sure they do so that the kids can't play with their iPads. But it was a much more clumsy box that made it that you couldn't turn on the television.
It's like a chastity belt for your cable box.
I just really found was. Out recently, we had a black and white TV for a lot of the early part of my childhood, and I always thought that's just because that's what we had. And I just found out that we had a color TV, and then when I was a baby, I was looking at it too much, like I was too into it. And so my mom got rid of the color one and got a black and white TV so that I'd be less interested in the TV.
Well, it apparently this didn't work.
No, it backfired. It was the exact opposite. And still to this day, like when I watch TV, I kind of feel like I'm like getting a treat.
Well, Akiva, unfortunately, you're in L.A., and Andy and Yorma are in New York, and we have to drop the L.A. line now, so we're going to lose our connection. I want to thank you so much for coming, Akiva Schaffer, and I wish we could talk some more, but we're going to have to drop the line. So congratulations on the new Lonely Island album.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
We're big fans.
Oh, bye. Thanks so much. Bye-bye. And Andy Samberg and Yorma Taconi, you can stick around, I hope? Yes?
Yes, yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
Terrific. So we'll continue the conversation after a break. This is Fresh Air.
Thank you.
If you're just joining us, my guests are two of the three members of The Lonely Island, Andy Samberg, who is best known for his years on Saturday Night Live, and Norma Taccone, who was a writer in Saturday Night Live and is also known now for his portrayal of the really pretentious artist in Girls, who is seeing Allison Williams for a few episodes. And he also directed the MacGruber movie and directs those AT&T commercials.
That's right, yeah.
Earlier, we were talking about your auditions for Saturday Night Live. And Andy Samberg, I have a question for you. When Bill Hader was on the show, I think it was in the past year, he talked about his audition for the show. And he said when he was auditioning for his show, on the way up the elevator at NBC to audition, he met you in the elevator.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw that you had all these props. Well, I'm going to let him tell the story. Here's a clip of him, of Bill Hader telling the story about meeting you on the way to his audition at Saturday Night Live.
I remember getting in the elevator for my audition, and there was a guy next to me who had a backpack full of props and wigs and things. And I went, oh, my God, that guy is so prepared. I have nothing. I have no props. And that was Andy Samberg. And Andy Samberg said he was looking at me going, oh, that guy has no props. He doesn't need props. And that was the first time we met. It was in that elevator.
Okay, so that was Bill Hader on Saturday Night Live not too long ago. So Andy Samberg, is that an accurate portrayal of what happened? Did you see him and think, oh, he's so confident he doesn't even need props?
Yeah, I thought I was dead in the water. And by the way, I was right. He did not need props, and it's embarrassing. You know, I mean, the difference between Bill and I has always been a joke between the two of us, because we are really good friends, and we do have a lot of respect for one another comedically, but we do such different things, which I think is what allowed us to be and stay close throughout our time at the show. Because I look at him, and he's someone who is like a master impressionist, can drop in and out of characters really well, can play sort of, adult characters really well, like game show hosts and news anchors and stuff. And I was always kind of like the floppy younger guy who was making fake rap videos. Looking back, I wish I had used less props in my audition.
It's always the most embarrassing point, like watching someone at the end of their audition have to clean up all of their props that have been strewn around the stage.
Just slow gathering.
Like, well, thanks a lot, guys. And over silence, collecting their things.
You can
and
hear,
out.
The buzz of the lights in the studio. Okay, well, I'm just going to pick up this dreadlock wig.
And this spinny hat.
When I was looking back at early Saturday Night Live sketches that you were on, Andy Samberg, mm-hmm. one of the things I noticed was your really shaggy haircut.
Mm-hmm. Hard to miss.
Yeah. So when you showed up with that haircut, did anybody say anything?
When I had my final meeting with Lorne before I got hired, which was essentially a meeting to be told I was hired, although he never told me I got hired. I got told after I left the meeting that I was hired, because that's how he works.
Hey, Lorne Michaels.
One of the questions he asked me a few questions. He said, so do you think you can do this? And I said, yeah, I like to think I could. And he said, and you feel like you could live in New York? And I said, yep, I actually lived here for 2 years at NYU. I love New York. And there was a long pause, and then he said, would you consider cutting the hair? And I said, I will shave bald if that's what you want. I really want to work here. And he laughed and said, okay. And then I left, and then the assistants in his office said, so? And I was like, did I get it? And they were like, yes, you got it. And I was like, oh, great. And then I called my parents and cried.
But you didn't cut your hair.
It was even longer when I auditioned than it was.
It's not like Lorne hasn't been around shaggy-haired guys before.
It was a little bit of a challenge for wigs and stuff. It's a lot of hair to get underneath a wig.
I think it was more the total stylelessness of it than the length itself.
It was a real mop. It was a real mop.
And Norma, I want to ask you about your role on Girls as the very pretentious artist Booth Julian.
Booth Jonathan.
Booth Jonathan, I'm sorry.
Yes.
And my favorite, well, I have several favorite of his appearances, but there's one episode in which the Allison Williams character is in your home-studio And you've done this massive video installation piece, so it's this like bank of videos. It's like four walls of videos, and it's like a very small room of videos. And so
it's like it's almost like a torture chamber.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Art. Yes, that's perfect, perfect. And you kind of like stick her inside and then shut her in, and she's locked in. She can't get out, and then she's stuck watching all of these images of things like a dog barking and a baby crying and like a herd of animals preying on another animal, and I think like maggots or something.
Yeah, while I check my email and make myself a coffee.
Exactly, exactly. It's really
and
hysterical.
Booth Jonathan has AOL, right?
Yeah, of course, of course.
That's my favorite touch of the whole episode is that Booth Jonathan has a little alert that goes, "You've got mail." You're like, oh man, he's not even on Gmail?
He's not a current guy.
In one scene that you're in, you have just like the worst seduction line. You've been flirting with the Allison Williams character, and she, you know, she's been flirting with you, but she insists she's not going to kiss you. And I'm going to play this scene, and we'll bleep out the necessary word.
So do you live with your boyfriend?
No, I live with my best friend.
Is she cute? Is she?
No. I mean, yes, she's cute, but I would never let her anywhere near someone like you.
Oh, burn.
Yeah, well, you usually hook up with, like, French girls and models, right?
All the time. Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Most of the time.
I feel like I have to say something.
What do you have to say?
I feel like I should tell you that I'm not gonna kiss you.
Why would you think that I would want to kiss you?
I don't know. I was going out on a limb. Don't make me feel stupid.
When you assume, you make an ass out of you and me. That's a saying. People say that.
It's been a long time since I heard that. Well, touche. I just felt like I had to say it. Booth Jonathan.
Okay.
Okay.
I see. But I want you to know, the first time I might scare you a little, because I'm a man and I know how to do things. See you later. Yeah.
That's my guess. Right? That's my guess. Yorma Taconi and Allison Williams in a scene from Girls. So what a horrible line. So what reaction did you get to that?
You know, what's funny is I felt the exact same way you did. Like both me and Allison were really nervous about the scene too, of just like, is this working? And, you know, I'm not like, you know, the most incredibly striking, handsome man on the planet. I look okay, but I was kind of like, you know, how am I pulling this off? This is supposed to be like a really, you know, funny but potentially sexy kind of moment. And it was interesting afterwards because I expected most people to be like, kind of like, that was laughable. And it sort of is to us, like obviously for all my friends who saw it, were kind of thinking, you know, how hilarious it was. And I thought so too, but I was more surprised at the reaction that I was getting from women for the last couple of years who, you know, when they find out that it's me or, you know, or when they first meet me are like, that line was pretty hot. And I was always really shocked. And it's women of all ages too. It's been really, there's women over 50 who have said that, like, that line, pretty hot.
Yeah, so we were pretty bummed when we realized the girls thought it was sexy.
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of, it was really horrifying.
That's really
I was like,
odd.
Oh, I'm doing it wrong, apparently. I just have to be a huge jerk.
The new Lonely Island album, one of the things that it jokes about is getting older. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for Akiva, he's a parent now. He has two kids.
Yeah.
So what does that mean to you in terms of the kind of comedy that you do about hip-hop?
Well, I mean, there's a trend in hip-hop of being more mature and getting older for real right now as well. So it actually coincided really nicely for us in terms of, you know, certain songs on our album, things like Diaper Money and YOLO, that are more about, you know, being an adult and the joke of bragging about the responsibilities that come with being an adult. And
yeah, we figure if Jay-Z can rap about how he can only wear button-ups now, we can rap about how we're married and how great that is.
And how we've got a great grave plot lined up.
We can't wait.
I want to squeeze in one more song from the new Lonely Island album, the WAC album. And this is an excerpt of Diaper Money, and it's an excerpt because several of the verses aren't clean enough to play on the radio. But describe what the premise of this one is.
Diaper Money arrives in three suites, each represented by a verse from each of the three members. The first one is Diaper Money, which is Akiva, who has two young children, and it's sort of bragging about being a dad. The second one is Yorma, which is something I can't say, but it's about how proud he is to be in a monogamous married relationship with his wife. Mm-hmm. And the third verse is me bragging about how I've got an incredible grave plot lined up.
He's very excited about his coffin.
And how I would say it's like a meditation on the inevitability of death.
Yeah.
Except
we're in a more mature, we're in a more mature place in our
like
lives
now. A hilarious meditation on that. It's, you know, it's about we're all in our mid-30s now, and we're all either married or engaged to be married and having kids or headed towards kids, and it's our reality, and we're like, why not embrace it and make an anthem for that?
And sadly, this is our most mature work to date.
Andy Samberg, Yorma Taconi, thank you so much. It's really been such great fun, and congratulations on the new Lonely Island album.
Thank you so
much.
It's been an honor for us to be on.
I got that grave plot. I got that grave plot. I got that grave plot. It's right off the highway. Wobbledy wobbledy drop into my grave plot. You afraid of death? Well, I'm afraid not. Cause I got the bomb spot right off the highway. I did it my way. A very small percent of the time way. I got my coffin picked out. Styrofoam painted like wood tricked out. It's even got handles to lower me smooth. And my tombstone only has
minimal typos.
Andy Samberg and Yorma Taconi are members of the trio The Lonely Island, along with Akiva Schaffer, who joined us earlier in the show. The new Lonely Island album is called The WAC Album. You'll find links to some of their videos on our website, freshair.npr.org. Coming up, jazz critic Kevin Whitehead reviews the debut album by singer Cecile McLaurin-Salvant, which has already made a big splash. This is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. Our jazz critic Kevin Whitehead has a review of the debut album by singer Cecile McLaurin-Salvant. He says few jazz debuts by singers or instrumentalists make this big a splash. Cecile McLaurin-Salvant was born in Miami to French and Haitian parents and started singing jazz while living in Paris. Back in the States, she won the Thelonious Monk vocal competition in 2010.
My blood boils with the tropic heat, and the rhythm of my heart has a tom-tom beat. You bring out the savage in me. Primitive love cries move my ears with the pressure of 100 million years. You bring out the savage in me. Oh, call it madness or sin. How was I not to know what was creeping within me?
Cecile McLaurin-Salvant and drummer Herlin Riley. That's a 1935 curio by singing trumpeter Valeda Snow, who had her own Parisian minute early on. McLaurin-Salvant's unusual material sets her apart as much as her power chops do. The most recent non-original tune on her nervily accomplished debut, Woman Child, is by Fats Waller. A couple tunes were recorded by 1920s blues star Bessie Smith, and a couple more are older than that. McLaurin Salvant also does two or three bona fide standards from the 1930s.
Grand to be alive, to be young, to be mad, to be yours alone. Grand to see your face, hear your voice, feel your touch, say I'm on your own. I did not know what year it was. Life was no prize.
I wanted love and merry words shining out of your eyes.
I'm wise and I know what time it is now.
Cecile McLaurin-Salvant doesn't just fine-tune her pitches. She'll also shade her vocal timbre from one phrase to the next. You can trace some of her effects back to Sarah Vaughan, Betty Carter, and Abby Lincoln, and maybe Paris-trained Madeleine Peyrou and Catherine Russell's early jazz period pieces. But McLaurin Salvant uses those examples mostly to illuminate the possibilities. She has her own sense of drama. The 1906 song Nobody comes from comedian Burt Williams, the droll Caribbean-American entertainer who didn't sing a song as much as act it out. Nina Simone also did this ode to cranky individualism in the 60s, but its character sketch sounds more contemporary now, even with archaic musical touches.
When winter comes with snow and sleet, and me with hunger and cold feet, who says, here's 25 cents, go on, get something to eat?
Nobody.
I never done nothing to nobody. I never got nothing from nobody, no time. And until I get something from somebody,
you can hear how much time pianist Aaron Deal's trio put into working with the singer to make every piece distinctive and brick solid. On the oldest tune, the man versus machine ballad John Henry, Deal chokes the piano strings with his free hand for a percussive, prepared piano effect. He makes you hear those hammers.
John Henry said to his shaker, now shaker, why don't you sing? I'm shaking 12 pounds from my hip on down. Now don't you hear that cold steel ring? Don't you hear that cold steel ring? Don't you hear that cold steel ring? Don't you hear that cold steel ring?
Cecile McLaurin-Salvant makes it all sound not effortless exactly, but sort of easy. You get the strong impression she's having a blast. In a way, that ease of execution is a problem. It creates the temptation to top herself and go for the extra big moments. It makes sense that she'd exploit her extreme highs and lows. She won't be able to reach them forever. And age tends to calm folks down, so the overexuberance may take care of itself. My point is this. She doesn't need to try to knock us out. We're already knocked out.
Ooh, what a moonlight can do. Ooh. Wait a while till that little moonbeam comes peeping through. You'll get fooled, you can't resist him, and all you'll say when you have kissed him is, ooh, what a little.
Can do.
Kevin Whitehead writes for Point of Departure, Downbeat, and eMusic, and is the author of Why Jazz. He reviewed Woman Child, the debut album by Cecile McLaurin-Salvant on the Mac Avenue label. You can download podcasts of our show on our website, freshair.npr.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at NPR Fresh Air and on Tumblr at nprfreshair.tumblr.com. Fresh Air's executive producer is Jenny Miller. Our technical director and engineer is Audrey Bentham. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Our associate producer for online media is Nell Beschenstein. Roberta Schurach directs the show. I'm Terry Gross.
The night is getting on, the band is getting slow, the crowd is almost gone, and here we are still dancing, nothing to do but waltz. Our feet can barely move, my legs are yelling, whoa, but we're in such a groove that love is still advancing. Nothing to do but waltz. You can't suggest that we could go on jitterbugging. We've nothing left for moves more strenuous than hugging.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Ally Bank, who believes intelligent news and knowledgeable customer service should be available around the clock. Learn more at allybank.com. From members of the American Institute of Architects, working to build better homes, businesses, and communities, building for life. More at aia.org. And from Subaru, introducing the all-new 2014 Forester. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Learn more at subaru.com. This is NPR.
On the next Fresh Air, the background behind the secret surveillance programs leaked by Ed Snowden. We'll talk about programs collecting metadata, the laws that govern those programs, and the questions those programs raise about privacy with journalist Shane Harris, the author of a book about the rise of America's surveillance state. He covers intelligence for Foreign Policy magazine. Join us.